You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Tower, KBOO 90.7. Dasha T said that.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Today we're talking with Jody Friend. Jody Galadriel Friend is an Indianapolis-based author of Trans Angelicism, a memoir of a trans ex-evangelical. Jody's also in a punk rock band, or you were?
I am, currently, yes.
You are. Let me just have you introduce yourself, Jody. Jody, welcome to Transpositive.
Thank you. My name is Jody Galadriel Friend. I wrote this book called Trans Angelicism. It is a memoir about growing up in the evangelical South and my exit from that world and my entrance into who I am. It is also very closely linked to the beginning of my band called Public Universal Friend that began in around 2020. That's who I am, and that's what this book is about.
Oh, great. Now, you're going to be coming to Portland. I want to get this at the very front of the show. You're going to be coming to Portland in October, and I know you're going to be doing some readings from your book. Can you tell us about that?
Of course. I have two dates that I'm going to be in Portland doing readings. One is going to be at Workers' Tap on the 17th, and the second is going to be October 18th at Bishop and Wild. And for both of these events, I will be doing readings of a couple of chapters from the book, and I will be selling them and doing book signings as well. I'm also working on finding local poets and authors to co-host with to kind of create more of a local involvement. And this will be part of the West Coast run of my book tour that will be going from Seattle all the way down to Los Angeles.
Oh, great. And what time are those events at, by the way?
I am aiming for them to begin at 7 p.m. For all of the events. And for these two, I'm sure there'll be a seven as well.
Great, thanks. So Jody, you are an ex-evangelical and you're also transgender. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Let's start. Tell us a little bit about your history. Tell me your story.
Wow. All right. Well, I was raised in the Great Smoky Mountains in the early 90s. And my dad is a Methodist pastor. So I grew up in a very Southern upbringing. I was raised being told I was a boy and was then encouraged to follow what a Southern boy's life was all about. So I was in Boy Scouts. I was leading Bible studies. I got married when I was quite young at 21 and moved to Indianapolis when I was 23 with my ex-wife. And it was during that time that I realized that there was quite a lot within me that was suppressed, and I began asking some questions within my church community that became apparent that they were quite dangerous questions to be asking. And it was through this process that I began writing down my thoughts and was realizing that this was far more than being about gender and being about faith, but it became more about these very human questions about kind of why do we define ourselves within the systems that we're in, and why do we buy what systems of power tell us about ourselves. So the book itself is a story that's very human and very, I like to refer to it as kind of squishy and subjective, because it's not something that's like this happened and then this happened and then this happened. But it's very nonlinear, the story, and it becomes so much more about these bigger questions about identity and about who we are as individuals and why we hold to matters of identity as closely as we do. So a lot of it is deconstructing not only what I believed, but also just who I am and who we are as people within a community.
Thank you. Growing up in the South, I mean, the South is permeated with religion. I mean, religion is just part of the air that Southerners breathe. I mean, it must have been challenging to both have to like look at and examine religion and also examine gender at the same time. Was it easier for you to kind of look at both of those at the same time? Or were they like two different deconstructions?
In my upbringing, gender was not really even a question. It was very much implied that this is the way things are, whether it's the dogma of religion or if it is the dogma of a gender binary, even down to what is innate to an individual based on the assignment of sex at birth. It was kind of given to me in this version of being that was like, you know, you are born this way and you will stay this way. And if you err outside of that, you are not only questioning these social conventions, but you're questioning God and anything in terms of authority that is spoken in the name of God is very hard to argue with, because something about it is very much like, this is how things have always been. If you question it, you are going to be alone in your thought. So of course it took me a long time to really get to the point of asking these questions. And once I did, my world started falling apart piece by piece. And for me, gender was something that was an inescapable question. I'm sure that if I wasn't trans, I would still be very much in these systems of religion, because it became an inescapable personal task to ask, why am I feeling like this in my body? Why do I struggle so much with my social assignment? And then the more I asked these questions, the more it became about myself as a holistic individual. And once I started to learn that there were other people who were also asking these questions, I started to find that some of them were asking these questions very much like I was, as a matter of personal identity. Because you can get away with being in church as long as you are cishet, as long as you have these very kind of status quo ways of living. If you're satisfied with the life and the Christian lifestyle that is offered to you, it's very easy to dig in your heels and double down and say, no, this is the only way, this is the only truth. But I found there's so much more diversity of thought and of being that's allowed for people who even are not trans or are not queer. And I think that's who this book is for people who, of course, on one hand are maybe queer and grew up in the church and are trying to deal with these questions of what we were taught in church about divinity and about our place in the universe and about our relationship with one another. But this book is also for people who might not be queer themselves, but might have these questions burning in the back of their minds. And I believe it is people who are trans, who are queer, who are subverting these systems of power to ask questions, that are the ones who are leading the way and deconstructing what we've always been taught.
It sounds like writing also played a big role in the process of your examination of issues around faith, around gender, around identity. Can you talk about the role that writing played in maybe helping you to figure some of this out?
I like to say that this book took years from my life and then gave them back completely different. And when I say that, I mean, this book absolutely ruined my life as I knew it. Once I started asking these questions, there were certain questions that cannot be taken back once they're asked. And I think part of the process of writing this was very much kind of plumbing these depths that once I peered into the abyss, I saw it looking back at me. And I saw it asking me questions about myself that were inescapable. And I think that this is the process of self-examination and self-awareness that I think is free from prescription. I think that there's a lot of people who say, you know, you will grow along this certain trajectory of thought as you mature. But I find that that question is different for everyone. And for me, it had a lot to do with my gender and what I believed. And I think for a lot of people, it might have to do with different modes of belief. And I think that everyone at some point in their lives will have to kind of reckon with these questions, especially if they don't feel that they fit in to the world that's been presented to them. And of course, there are people who this world works for. And I think it's very interesting to ask ourselves, why are we taking for granted these systems that we're in? And why do we take for granted, you know, who we consider ourselves to be? And for me, in my brain, that involved writing it down. And it started out very much as like an extended journal entry, or just maybe because of the way my brain works, I was writing essays that were, to me, very kind of academic and intellectual and very ironclad arguments. But the more I went along with these questions, the more I realized that it demanded a deep personalization and a deep investment of myself and looking into the mirror and saying, all right, well, the deepest findings and discoveries I'm going to have or going to be in examining myself and why I believe what I believe, that might not have to do with what I'm told to believe or what I'm asked to believe.
Jody, how is your book arranged? Is it a series of essays? Is it a novel? How does your book read?
I think in some ways there is some linear storytelling to it. So it is in some ways like a novel. Like it starts off with the scene of me coming out to my ex-wife in 2019. And from there, it kind of sets this tone of the trans existence being something that is very surreal, and it is very earth-shattering in a lot of ways, and it challenges so many paradigms. And then from there, I started kind of moving back and forth through time. I have a chapter about growing up in the South and what that was like, and to be embodied and to recognize different forms of socialization and how they affected me throughout my life. And then it jumps forward in time to maybe 4 years ago when I started asking these questions as a church staff member. And then from there, about halfway through the book, it reaches this point of, all right, I've come out. So much of my life has changed. What now? And I think a lot of times when we read these trans stories, there are these great depths of pain and turmoil and heartbreak. And sometimes that kind of ends with a question mark of like, okay, what now? But this book has about a halfway point where it starts to kind of get away from the purely trans narrative and the purely kind of This is what we expect in a modern trans story. And then it moves very much into these bigger questions about identity. And of course, there are still storied elements, but a lot of it does get into kind of philosophy and to existentialism and transcendental thought. And I think that's what makes it so special. It's like by the end, there's kind of a look back. And it's saying like, wow, okay, there's quite a lot here that has changed, but there are some questions that still remain and may forever remain. And there are reckonings with people who might hate trans people. And what is that voice like to me? And how is that received now after seeing so much of the beauty of the trans life? And I think that these are the questions that are very much current with a trans narrative. And I say this knowing that I am but one voice, I am but one story. But I think that's something I find among all trans people is the realization that we're all asking these questions with our very existence. It's not just about coming out, and it's not just about how we present within the first couple years of transition, but it's like, what does the rest of this look like? And what does this mean for the future of trans bodies and the trans population as a whole?
Sorry, thanks. We're talking today with Jody Galadriel-Friend, the Indianapolis-based author of Transangelicism, a memoir of a trans ex-evangelical. Jody has readings in Portland on October 17th at the Workers' Tap and October 18th at Bishop and Wild. Jody, would you be interested in reading a couple of passages from your book for us?
Absolutely. I can read the intro chapter, which is a few pages long, if that's not too long.
That would be great. We would love to hear it.
All right. This is from the very beginning of the book, chapter zero, The Handbook They Should Have Given You. I originally set out to write a handbook, the one I so often wished I had in those days, tucked in my jacket pocket along the way. No one should have to figure this out from nothing, I thought. Often I would reach for its guidance, but it would elude me. In my first draft of this book, I attempted to create the ideological opus I so desperately desired, that which would enable me to keep a safe distance from any true loss or danger, in other words, from any real vulnerability. Fact is, intellectualization for many, many years kept me safe. My story and every humanization it would offer me was just a detail. Loving myself was all but irrelevant. I thought if I could just find a way to bypass any sort of reliance upon such subjectivities like experience, perspective, or intuition, to disclose only the most palatable, skeletal, easily digestible account of my humanity through my writings, it might be convincing enough to those I thought would only love me if convinced, thus being perhaps the safest way to argue an ironclad case for the legitimacy of my existence. This, however, proved to offer an end so dreadfully, sadly contrary to what I would ultimately come to need. I grew up being told I was a boy, and relating outright to anyone that I really felt like I was a girl could only mean certain death. I instead spent years of my life convincing myself it would be better to remain buried than to be alone. It would be 28 years until I took steps to do something about it. The risk would prove to be inescapable, so I knew that if I was really going to take the steps involved, it would probably be best if I were sure as hell. Being queer often means to positively emanate vulnerability with your very existence, oftentimes by pure necessity. If hatred speaks, names us abominable, deluded, inhuman, the best we can do is see it for what it is, fear, within the oppressor's sense of self projected onto the vulnerable. We abominations exist only within the minds of those who create their own hell. My intention through all of this has become to tell my story, at last, with all its subjective, squishy, delicate meanderings, and most of all, with its humanity and inevitable naivete, knowing I will be criticized. People will hate me for saying these things, if only for the differential of power imbued in telling the truth. It should, but cannot go without saying that the story of one woman is not that of all women, nor is the story of one trans woman the story of all trans people. And I think that's the point. To be clear, though many stories like this have been told through different means in different languages and cultures across time, this is but only one story, one person, one voice. If this work were to find you long past the time of need, I hope it would remain for you a latent grace. Likewise, in what may be for you a time of new adolescence, or if you seek refuge and hope, possibly even retribution, I hope only that this might be taken with such equal grace. Think of this as a supplement, a trip, but never forget that you already have the power within you to be, to love. An entire year and a half before I came out, I wrote the first edition of this book, that is, in 2019. It went by a few names at that time, namely, The World Is Not Ready, with its accompanying The Trans Girl Survival Guide, Dressed Like a Man, and How to Be Trans in America, each a remote testing ground for the inevitable cataclysmic end to the life I knew. This book was, more than anything, a work of therapy for me, for the sake of my own individual processing of the following events you are about to witness. It was, in essence, a grief ritual, before, during, and after coming out, the grief being for death, the ritual for the sake of new life. It happened all at once and rarely made sense, especially to me, at a time for which I could not have been prepared if I had all the time in the world. However, I believe this process in the end is worthy of sharing, if only for the sake of others' paths of new life, healing, grief, and death. There are a few directions I envisioned this going, and the one the process revealed was possibly the most uncomfortable and humbling imaginable, a story. Over time, it showed itself to be not exactly a memoir, textbook, or work of pure nonfiction, but something of a humanist queer liturgy. Conclusively, even in my pursuit of good enough objectivity, I believe the human story is just about as close as anyone can come to this certain brand of success. My goal is to tell a series of stories that I find to be the most potent testament to my experience, to illuminate a particular humanization I find often lacking in stories specifically about transgender individuals, and furthermore, ones who grew up poor, Southern, and evangelical. I believe what you hold in your hands may be the most real story I have to tell, apart from what may otherwise be a purely human, gloriously mundane one. I spent most of my life, often even still, assuming that those around me appear to have some authority of autonomy that I don't, some sort of agency, assumption of purpose or right to being or belonging that I don't have myself. It's in the fissures of this illusion that one is offered a glimpse of truth. And if one were to take it, one may be afforded the courage to do something about it. I'm not here to display my imminent prophetic discourse, but instead to employ my fissures in my own holy flesh, with all its curves, idiosyncrasies, metaphors, and cellulite, as the most potent site of this narrative authority. It's here. The story is within you, within me. But much like that glimpse of truth amidst the fissures, it is something one must engage with over and over again, often despite all that is safe, so as to witness the lifting of the veil that could not occur otherwise. Authenticity demands that we break through again and again. Intuition guides us there. These are our most powerful tools and our greatest threat to systems of power that would much rather us be docile, demure, and cooperative. I hope it's apparent that that's not what we're here to do. The writing of this book was itself a significant catalyst for change in my life. It's difficult to encapsulate just how dangerous these writings were for me when I started out. There were many times when I questioned if I should have begun at all, but at one point or another, I found that I had no choice but to continue. Once certain questions have been asked, there is no turning back. This book took years off my life, then ended up giving them back in a way wholly unrecognizable to the person I was when I began. It was through these questions of identity and eternity, love, God, queerness, mysticism, and selfness, that I might let myself see myself for the first time. The questions imbued would ultimately end my life as I knew it, and through its unimaginable richness, wilderness, and ecstasy, new life would begin to take place. I can't believe I'm being this self-referential this early and using this many big words, but I'm not sure there's ever going to be a better time or method in this life to do so. So buckle up, friend. I'm not shifting this thing out of park until you do. Can't risk it, bud. Too dangerous out there otherwise. Chances are, by your interest in this book, you're either queer, may become queer, love someone who is, hate someone who is, or you may have no idea who or what it is that we're talking about at all. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. I have a story to tell you.
Wow, that's just so wonderful. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. So kind.
That's the introduction to your book, Jody.
That is. Yes, it is.
Oh, great.
There's also a foreword written by Brenda Marie Davies, who created the God is Gray podcast and web series, as well as the writer of On Her Knees, a memoir of a Jezebel. Oh, what is it? Let's see. What's it called? I should know this off the top of my head.
Oh, that's okay.
On Her Knees, memoir of a prayerful Jezebel. She's an author that I've looked up to for a long time who lives in Hollywood. And she agreed to write the foreword for my book, which is very exciting.
Oh, great. Again, so we're kind of at about the midpoint of the show. Jody, tell us again about your book and your reading.
Of course.
What's coming up for you?
Yes, so I am the writer of the book Transangelicism, a memoir of a transgender ex-evangelical. And I'm going on a West Coast book tour starting in Indianapolis, where I live. But then I'm going to fly on over to Portland and have a couple of readings there in October, on the 17th of October at Workers' Tap at 7 p.m., as well as Bishop and Wild on the 18th at 7 p.m. And then I will be continuing on down the coast, going up to Seattle first and then going all the way back down to Los Angeles throughout the latter half of October. And then it will continue wherever else in the world. We'll see.
Oh, great. Well, wonderful. So your book, it's so interesting. I loved your foreword. I mean, I can't wait to read your book. I really can't. So I was wondering a couple of things just when I was listening to you read the very first part. One thing that really struck me, and I just wanted to ask you about this. I mean, you don't have to answer it if you don't feel like it, but you talked about how you imagine that other people, you've always imagined that other people had this autonomy or this agency. That's, you, do you remember that part where in your introduction, can you talk about that a little bit more?
Wait, yeah. There's a lot about growing up in the church that I think made me have a strange sense of agency within myself. And this is something that I tackle later on in the book and later chapters. I go into great depth about the nature of agency, autonomy, who gives us the right to make changes to our bodies. Because growing up in Christianity, there was this narrative that trans people are changing their bodies and are playing God in this way. And I've always thought that attack on trans autonomy was very interesting, because it is something that I feel viscerally as something that is very challenging. Because growing up, I was taught, you know, God created each person in this certain way that is kind of, we're kind of ordained to follow this path that is before us. And if you were born male and raised to be a male, there's kind of this idea that we are to follow certain modes of masculinity, certain modes of obligation. And this could include leadership. This could include what our sexual selves are like, what our modes of expression are limited to. And growing up, I was always very confused by this. And there would be times where I would recognize that there was a narrative that was separate from men and for women. And I started to recognize this really from a very early age. And the older I got, the more kind of galvanized, the more kind of solidified this idea became. And it frustrated me more and more. And I think it's kind of interesting that some people come at trans existence for themselves from a perspective of this being like a a mode of expression, or it might be something that's very much like an embodied physical experience of looking at your body and feeling dysphoria. And of course, not every trans person has dysphoria, but it's something that's very common. And for me, it was something that came from a much more kind of intellectualized place of trying to fit this kind of social conditioning and deconstructing it from that angle, which to some people might just be completely insufferable because it's not the most exciting angle to come at trans existence from. But for me, it was something that I think there was this Methodism and ideology of growing up evangelical that I could intellectually explain to you with perfect detail why God existed, why I'm a sinner, why men and women were different. And for me, the more I looked at this evidence, the more it kind of became like, oh, this doesn't really add up, like on an intellectual level. And it would only really hold up if I were to kind of suspend certain facts of my reality. So I started to realize that, like, I was asking these questions of autonomy and agency and realizing that I had placed those within this dogmatic sphere of religion. And the more I started kind of looking at the pieces I was given by Christianity and how to interpret living an embodied experience, there was quite a disconnect. And there's actually quite a disconnect in religion. I find in many religions a disconnect between the corporal kind of means of existence and the spiritual. And I think that the trans life is a beautiful example of the reconciliation of the physical and the spiritual and how they work together and how they can be an expression of the other. And what I've found is that there's kind of this union thought of individuation. And part of that is recognizing the autonomy that we hold as human beings and the beauty of kind of this transhumanist way of existentialist thought, of recognizing that we as humans are a magnificent expression of autonomy and agency. And there is a physical limit. There is only so much that we as humans can do to change our bodies. And I think trans people will be the first to attest to this. There's only so much we can do. And I think that within physical realities, we do have kind of a limited mode of agency. And there are some people, I think, who I have viewed throughout my life as having this unnatural confidence or this, you know, that changing my body to better fit my inner world is not for me. It's for those people over there. There's no way that it could be for me. And part of, I think, transition for me was recognizing my worth. And I think that there's sometimes this very strange narrative toward trans people of being like, how can you hate yourself so much that you would cut up your body and rearrange your body parts and be this strange version of a human embodiment? When for me, I think that is exactly what makes trans people so beautiful, is that we see ourselves as moldable and dynamic. And there are changes that can take place that are very beautiful. And it's not something to be afraid of, but it's something to embrace, especially when we realize that cis people do this all the time. And oftentimes it becomes very politicized when trans people do these very same gender affirmations. So I think the modes of agency that trans people have are very much leading the way in what is possible for humans to be when we really let ourselves be autonomous.
Oh, just so interesting. Yeah, so interesting. Do you think that transgender people are, in a way, maybe playing God?
Well, I think it depends how you define God. Like, I think that there's quite a lot within evangelical Christianity that taught me about divinity. And I think that that is something that I fell in love with within my Christian upbringing, was this idea that, like, we are part of the divine. We're part of the divine consciousness. And I've always been more liberal in my conservative upbringing for thinking like that. But I was realizing that what I was recognizing was divinity within myself and with other people around me. So when I left Christianity, I was really grappling with these questions of, you know, what gives me the right to call myself divine? Like, what kind of crazy person am I to think that I can be like God? And what I've realized is that we are all kind of little gods. If we are woven within the blanket of the divine consciousness, part of our nature is to self-create. And I think that we don't have to play God. We are God. And I think that when that power is decentralized and kind of decoupled from the dogma of religion, there is so much power given to the individual. And what I find is that it's not this dangerous, awful, hellish thing to give divinity to the individual. It is actually what gives us dignity and what gives us the confidence and the ability to know who we are. And that doesn't have to be something that is this kind of way of removing divinity from us, but I think it's something that we can really embody what is divine, which is why I think that trans people are kind of pioneering these questions of what it means to be human and what it means to be divine. And I don't think that has to be at all at odds with religion necessarily, but oftentimes it's hard for people who did grow up in religious upbringings to hold those two truths at once.
Thank you. So I just want to shift gears for just a minute, because I wanted to make sure to get to this before the end of the interview. You'll have to tell me, what is a queer Appalachian doom punk band?
It's chaos. It's absolutely chaos. My band has gone through a few different iterations, and I have been a songwriter since I was, you know, 12 years old when I first got my guitar. And I grew up around bluegrass and around Appalachian music. I actually minored in bluegrass music at East Tennessee State and majored in art. Big money maker over here. It's fantastic. And I grew up within this this world of bluegrass and country music. And then I also just like love stoner doom metal and punk rock, and have been very fascinated by like 90s grunge bands and kind of this post-punk or post-grunge movements like Fugazi and Electric Wizard and Smashing Pumpkins and these kinds of bands that are very dark and sludgy. And what I've found is through different iterations in my band, our last album we released as a band was like kind of an Americana, kind of Southern Gothic kind of sound. And before that, it was more of indie rock. And the stuff we're working on now is very much like along the lines of like basement, sleep, turnstile, and like sweet pill. And they're kind of more in this kind of emo punk kind of world. So it's a combination of a lot of things. And I would encourage listeners to, I don't know, draw your own conclusions, I guess. I'm still working on it.
Can we play one of your songs on the show?
So the song I am sharing here is called Firestarter, and it is the first track off of my band's 2021 release, Perennials. And I wrote this song upon leaving the church when I was told that I was that my mirror visibility was a threat to the community I was in. So part of the chorus says, you're afraid, I think, when I'm visible, threatened by what I don't hide. This one is Firestarter.
Thank you.
sounds great.
Great. Great, Jody. So thanks again. What was the name of that song?
It's called Firestarter.
Oh, great. And tell me one more time, what does that song mean to you?
This was, the song's kind of an accident on the record. It was the last one that I wrote for it. And it was funny that the drums for the song were actually for a different song that I scrapped, but I repurposed them to create a new song. And in doing so, the song itself is about the cornerstone of the album being my coming out album, really. Like when I was writing the album, it was during the last 3 years before I would come out. So since it's the first track on the record, when you hear it, it's kind of like, oh, okay, interesting. This is a coming out album of a trans woman who grew up as a Christian. And there are a lot of themes within it that have to do with visibility, which is something that I was grappling with in a big way. And part of my coming out story is that so much of my transition occurred on stages and in front of cameras and in interviews. And the last chapter of my book has a lot to do with being visible and finding that everyone's going to have their own perspective of me and how scary that can be. Like I've performed on stages in front of more people than I can take in. And I've played on, you know, in many, many music videos and on many records since this song came out. But throughout this whole thing, I've had this kind of process of recognizing that I will always be perceived by people in a certain way. And that's kind of this strange paradox of the trans existence is I have my own experience of myself, my own story, and people are going to perceive me from what they see on the outside. And as terrifying as that can be, that's all really anyone has. So for me, this song has been very healing and gotten to play it for a lot of people. And it's been in every set list we have played over the last like 4 years. And it's one of my favorites.
Thanks, Jody. We have about maybe 5 or 6 minutes left in the show. Is there anything in your book that, like a short excerpt, you'd like to read to kind of close out the show?
Sure. I can read. Yes, I will read this little chapter called Book End. And it is at the very, very end of the book. And I am trying to pull it up right now. In 1977, NASA launched the Voyager missions, 1 and 2. These identical crafts contain specialized instruments for observing our solar system and collecting data to then be sent back to Earth, including a variety of earthly media, should any intelligent life stumble upon it in the vast expanse of the cosmos. Upon these probes were identical golden records containing earth sounds, songs, and voices, as well as anatomical figures of human beings, equations, and atomic representations, a bold distillation of what humans had come to know about themselves for all of time. There was also included in this collection a unique set of coordinates detailing our cosmic address, calculated in part by astronomer and astrophysicist Carl Sagan, where the nearest pulsar stars were laid out concentrically, each with a line leading back to the center of the map, this being our solar system. The idea was that if intelligent life were to find this code, one might be able to deduce where the humans are, where this craft is from, and how to get there. I got this map tattooed on the back of my left hand recently. I'm in love with it, with this idea of a cosmic address. But my favorite part of it is that now, around 50 years later, is in many ways inaccurate, completely unusable. Turns out, the positions of stars change over time. Our instruments and calculations improve, and that which we had come to call our own identity, placement, and point in space-time also changes. Our information changes, and so therefore does our understanding. I went into the tattoo shop knowing this. What I think is great about this discrepancy is that this is what humans do. This is the most human of initiations, to be known, to be seen, and to speak it into the infinite all. At some point, humans found enough value in themselves to consider themselves worthy of being known and sent out a couple of little messages into deep space with only a microscopic chance of being seen for the effort. That's what life is, I think. A probe sent out into space, looking for connection. That's all this book is. There's a little planet we each call home, each desiring to be known through our stories upon it. It's going to be imperfect, but it doesn't matter. All that matters, I believe, is that you do it. I hoped all along I would have something close to an answer to my cosmic question, the one that destroyed my life with its treacherous extradition and ruthlessly lavish beauty, one that might tell me with a flawless rationality and minimally variable formulaic constants what it all means. I had an idea that maybe by writing it out, still unsure of my reasons, that I might gain that reason. Or perhaps by some extraneous chance, it might be seen by others. I didn't find it in surgeries or procedures, on stage, at doctor's appointments, or in recognition, humiliation, or thrills, nor did I find it in exile, deconstructivism, or abandonment. This book isn't for anyone to live their life by, or as an answer to a question, or even as a direct help to anyone in particular. I can't claim that. This book is also not selfless. There is much here that I wrote for myself as a way to process it all, for me. In the end, all that remains is what one is willing to give to oneself, even if it is beyond reason to others, even if it is not quantifiable, profitable, or easy to explain.
Wow, great. Thank you. That was Jody Galadriel Friend. Jody is an Indianapolis-based author of Trans Angelicism. Jody, tell us one more time where your readings are going to be in Portland, and also tell us how people can get in touch with you if they want to find out more.
Of course. So I have two readings coming up in Portland on October 17th at Workers Tap at 7 p.m., as well as at Bishop and Wild on October 18th at 7 p.m. And those will be the two readings that I'm doing in Portland, followed by a book tour up and down the West Coast. If you want to get in touch with me, you can go to jodyfriend.com or transangelicism.com and click the Contact Me page. And that way you can get in touch with me if you have any questions or if you have any complaints or criticisms. I will definitely read those, for sure. So that's how to get in touch with me.
Great, Jody. Thanks so much today for joining us on Transpositive.
Thank you so much, Emma.
Bedroom surprise. They call it climbing, and I call it visibility. They call it coolness, and I call it visibility. They call it way too rowdy, I call it finally free.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in to KBOO every second Sunday of the month 8 to 10 p.m. for Pacific Northwest Tunes, a show dedicated to showcasing our Pacific Northwest bands and musicians. That's Pacific Northwest Tunes every second Sunday of the month, 8 to 10 p.m., here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. K-Boo.
The following audio is from a rally held in North Portland to commemorate the one-year mark of the ongoing Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip.
What we're witnessing here is the undoing of the world order as we know it. Make no mistake, this war that we're seeing right now, it will break the world.